Hey, Rafer.
Hey, Kristen.
I have a feeling that you have a great story to tell me about what you did on your 21st birthday.
Can't remember. Can't remember at all what I did on my 21st birthday, because there's that great myth that surrounds your 21st birthday, that this will be the first time you can drink or go into a bar.
But you were drinking for decades before.
But it was my 21st birthday marked none of those things. I honestly can't remember. How about you?
I was living in England at the time as an undocumented immigrant, you might say. And all I wanted to do was see Barry Manilow's new West End production of Copacabana. And my friends actually took me to see it. And Barry Manilow was there. And I believe the show closed like 15 minutes later. But it was a truly magnificent 21st birthday. And like you, I'd already been drinking for a long time.
Especially if you're in England.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, exactly. Right. As an undocumented, of course I was drunk all the time.
I don't think you need any documentation to get drunk in England.
Oh my God. I feel like someone's going to come in from immigration and arrest me at this point. But anywho, the reason we're talking about all of this is obviously
21 and over.
Yes, also known as Hangover 25.
Oh, good. Ba-dum-bum.
Oh, and we're going to talk about that with a very special guest. But before we do that, let's introduce ourselves. I'm Kristen Meinzer, producer for The Takeaway.
And I'm Rafer Guzman, movie critic for Newsday, and this is Movie Date.
All righty, Rafer, before we get to the main event, let's just get some of these other movies out of the way.
Oh, yeah, the other movies.
I know you will love them.
Why don't we start with a little movie, a little thriller called Phantom.
Squadron Command is insisting on the most experienced captain and crew available.
I'm being retired, remember? You should know that. Your signature's all over the transfer.
Considering your history, Command wanted to honor you with our last patrol.
Honor me?
The Navy's an unforgiving place. We're both proof of that.
Kristen, wake up, Kristen.
I'm sorry.
What?
Oh, God.
Oh, good.
It's just so... Okay, what were you saying? What's going on?
Okay, so I'm not going to ask you to give the plot summary for that one, which leaves me with the incredibly difficult task of giving one myself. This is a Cold War thriller taking place, I think, in the 80s, maybe late 80s. About the crew of a Soviet sub. Ed Harris plays the captain. He's on a mysterious mission. David Duchovny is on board, which makes it even more mysterious. And they're going to, and the two of them are going to have a little mano a mano and some disagreements about just what their mission is. I'm just going to say that the first thing that most viewers will be wondering, perhaps, or noticing, is that Ed Harris and David Duchovny and the entire cast are all Americans, and yet they are playing Russians, Soviet Russians in the 80s, and it's a real weird experience. Did you find that hard to wrap your head around in this movie?
No, you know what I loved about it? Once we had a listener call in, and I keep bringing her up forever.
I know exactly who you're talking
about. She's the one who said, I am just sick of everybody having a British accent if they're not American. And I actually appreciated watching this movie that nobody put on a fake accent.
Nobody had a fake Russian accent.
No Russian accent, no English accent. They just, you know, they did their thing.
Well, how did you like the one guy who had the really broad Southern accent? The guy that sounded like he was from, I think I looked him up. He's from like one of the Carolinas, and you can tell he sounds like he's from the American South. And here he is on a Soviet sub. Hi, Captain. Hi again, Captain Ed Harris.
Can I just say, Rafer, I just hated this movie so much that I would take any bit of inconsistency as at least something to make my ears or eyes perk up.
It was
such a boring, boring, boring movie.
It's incredibly boring, and it makes absolutely no sense. It's impossible in this movie to tell in any given scene what anyone is talking about. It was just completely baffling.
They talk slowly. There's lots of pauses. People are having epileptic seizures.
Yes.
There's just all, I don't know. I don't even want to talk about this anymore. Can I just say it's a bad date?
A complete disaster.
Awful,
yeah, a terrible date.
Awful, awful date.
So let's move on to Jack the Giant Slayer.
What's the matter, love? Not enjoying the show?
Get your hands off me.
Hey, that's no way to treat a lady. Lady, to be honest, you looked a little too drunk to do that. Now, once say we let the good lady go home, and I'll consider forgetting all about this.
Oh, that Nicholas Holt. He's so...
Yeah, you love that guy.
I just love him. I know he's probably like totally age inappropriate for me to have a crush on.
He's like 20... I don't know what. He's not... He's plays a teenager in this, but he's not... He's not 18. He's 20-something.
I'm not really out to steal everyone's teenage sons. Just Nicholas Holt, who's actually not a teenager. He just plays one on television. But
right.
he's fantastic. He's also in Warm Bodies right now.
Right.
And he also is famous for About a Boy. And... he is playing Jack, as in Jack and the Beanstalk, in this modern retelling of it. There's a princess that he's defending in that scene there who he has a bit of a romance with. And there are giants and there's beanstalks. There's the whole thing there. What did you think, Rafer?
Well, here's one reason I loved this movie, and I'm going to take issue.
Oh, you just played all your cards.
I did. I'm happy to do it. Here's the thing. You call it a modern update, and I think that's a little bit because we're so used to any fairy tale that hits the screen must be a modern update. It's Hansel and Gretel. They're going to have machine guns. It's, you know, if it's Snow White, she's going to have a sword. And this movie actually, I thought, was not a modern update. It's an old-fashioned classic fairy tale. You do have Jack. You do have the beanstalk. There are some changes to the story, but they're more like elaborations to make it a bigger, richer, 90-minute feature-length story. And I thought it had a great screenplay, co-written by Christopher McQuarrie, Usual Suspects.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And the movie's directed by Bryan Singer, who also directed Usual Suspects and all the X-Men films. I just thought this movie, it's not the most magical movie. I was not that impressed with Nicholas Holt and Eleanor Tomlinson.
Oh,
I know. I'm sorry that you think
so
he's a cutie.
Handsome.
I know.
I just want to hug him and hug him.
I didn't think he's that. I don't think there's a lot of there on screen with him. But great supporting cast, great direction, runs like clockwork. Stanley Tucci is the villain. What more do you want? Ewan McGregor is the gallant knight, and he's really fun.
And I just thought, handsome as well.
And he is. I do like Ewan McGregor. And I thought it was a really enjoyable movie for once. I mean, it's so rare to find a kid's movie that you like. And I like this one. You?
But you know what? What I am going to say about the modern thing, here's where the modernity comes in. You have lots of CGI.
Lots of CGI.
Lots and lots of, you can tell this movie's very 2013 in that way.
Oh, yeah.
But you're right. It's a good, rollicking, old-fashioned fairy tale. I would say it's the best fairy tale adaptation of the last several years.
Definitely.
I can't think of anything that comes close in the last couple years for adaptations. I totally recommend this movie 100%. It's a fantastic date, whether you're going with the kids, whether you're a grown-up. I don't care who you are. You're going to probably really have a good time in this movie.
Yeah, very good. Very good kid date movie for sure.
Let's talk about the next date we have with the wonderful Jeff Yang. Hi, Jeff.
Hello.
Thanks so much for being here today.
It's terrific to be on a date with the two of you.
Is this your first time doing that, Jeff?
In public, yes.
Now, we all know Jeff Yang is one of the greatest thinkers of our time. He writes for Wall Street Journal, the Dow Jones column. He has founded what magazines and publications have you founded? What have you taken over and started in this world?
All of them. No, I founded a publication way back when called A Magazine. Very confusing to people because, you know, they expected a definite article. The magazine? No, A Magazine. I've written books. Probably the one that's most familiar to people is I had the opportunity to co-write Jackie Chan's autobiography, I Am Jackie Chan, also confusing people because I'm not actually Jackie Chan.
Yes, very confusing.
You're Jackie Chan to me, though.
I can see that on a resume being confusing, author of I Am Jackie Chan.
We are Jackie Chan.
Well, we're thrilled to have you with us today, Jeff, because Jeff, being a great thinker, a pop culture scholar, and an Asian American, mm-hmm. we wanted you to weigh in on this week's biggest release, 21 and Over. Here's a clip of it.
Jeff Chang, this isn't just any birthday, okay? This is your 21st birthday. This is the day that you become a man. In the United States of America, Bald Eagles and Budweiser, you go out and drink. If we're in Africa, you would have to leave the village and not come back till you killed a bear.
None of that is true.
There's no bears in Africa?
No.
Really?
You have to read a book.
Whatever, I'm taking you out whether you want to or not.
But just one beer. One beer.
That's all I wanted.
Now, 21 and Over, from the same writers of
The
Hangover,
writers,
right?
John Lucas and Scott Moore, who wrote The Hangover, and they wrote this, and this is their directorial debut. you can see they basically just, you know, they've tinkered with the plot a little bit. Instead of a wedding the next day, it's a big med school interview. And instead of, you know, the missing friend, there's the drunk friend, who is Jeff Chang. Wild night, you know, same thing. Everything gets out of control. Flashes of danger here and there, but mostly just a lot of women and nudity and partying and vomiting. And how are we all gonna wrap this up and make it back to the big wedding / med school interview? And that's basically the plot of the story. And this is one thing you can say is at least everyone here is acting their age. They're all 21 years old. So that's the basic summary, right?
That's it. And you know Jeff Chang, who you mentioned. They do say. I think we just killed Jeff Chang. I don't know, maybe 30 times in the movie.
Well, no one ever. I don't think ever once calls him Jeff.
It's always Jeff Chang.
Jeff Chang. And in fact, if you stay and watch the credits, he is listed as Jeff Chang with no space. So they know this is the joke. This is the joke in the film about the Jeff Chang character, who is largely unconscious through most of it.
And I do have to say, I was trying my best. No offense to you, Jeff Yang, for being here. I was trying my best to get a Jeff Chang to come on here.
One of the many Jeff Changs, yes.
None of the Jeff Changs I reached out to got back to me, and I'm like, whatever, I'm going to get Jeff Yang instead.
I think it was the right choice.
I think so, too.
So we would love your take on this, Jeff Yang.
First of all, I wish I could say that the only reason I was cringing during this movie was because, you know, I think we just killed Jeff blank rhyming with Aang.
Yes.
repeatedly being presented there. I mean, it's interesting to me because on the one hand, this is a movie that purports to have an Asian character as one of its primary protagonists. I mean, they say ad infinitum how good a friend he is, mm-hmm. how much they love him. Don't you remember hanging out with him all the time? But most of the movie really is about different ways to abuse him in really humiliating fashion while he's mostly unconscious. I mean, you know, it's kind of like The Hangover meets Weekend at Bernie's because much of the time he's in an alcoholic coma.
Yeah.
And when he's not, he is, you know, dancing naked.
Yes, right.
Sometimes running naked.
Sometimes naked.
Right.
Having people put things on him while he's naked.
Yeah,
just setting
know,
stuff
just
on
to,
him.
Just to sort of, you know, to shake it up a little bit.
They throw him off a balcony.
Yes.
They actually
throw him off a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
He just gets thrown out of things a lot.
Yeah, he dropped onto the hood of a car. Mm-hmm. He's defaced, actually defaced, right, with a marker.
Yes.
Someone glues something to his penis, of
yes.
course. It really wouldn't be a comedy unless you glued something to somebody's penis.
Yes.
And,
you know, so yeah, so that it is a long list of abuse. You know, when I was writing my deeply negative review on this film, which won't actually run in the paper until Saturday, mm-hmm. I was trying to figure out though, what about it was racist? What about the treatment of this character is racist? Is it just because he was cast is it just because an Asian actor plays him, or is there something more?
So this is interesting because I actually got into some arguments with friends about Hangover and Hangover 2 because I when I was writing at the time for the San Francisco Chronicle, wrote a lengthy piece which simultaneously slammed Hangover 2 when it came out and defended Hangover 1.
Hmm.
And the reason is because the difference between the two is in the first one, you had, you know, Ken Jeong's character clearly letting it all hang out in more ways than one.
That's right.
He was over the top. He was silly. He was, you know, kind of vaguely effeminate and certainly self-humiliating. But so was everybody else. I mean, there was a sense in which his character was presented as an agent, you know, as an agent of crazy change.
And he's almost kind of the winner in that film, right?
Yeah.
He's almost the one that kind of comes out on top in a way.
Yes, and unfortunately, in the second one, they take everything that was sort of gloriously over the top about Ken Jeong's character, and now I'm doing it, not calling him Ken, but Ken Jeong.
Ken Jeong.
No space.
No space.
They amp up the stuff that was kind of unpleasant several notches, but then they also remove that agency. They stick him in an ice chest, essentially, not to be a spoiler, for most of the movie, and basically just turn him into somebody who doesn't have control over his surroundings or settings and isn't even part of the momentum of the film. And if you look at this film, that's a very similar thing. This could have been – when Kristen and I actually saw this movie, I said, what's interesting is that in some ways, the whole idea of the college movie or the kind of young person's crazy sex romp journey was changed up by the cult success of the Harold and Kumar films,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And for not only because they added a layer of surrealism and just amp, you know, again, turning it to 11 that hadn't been seen for a while, but also because the characters themselves, the relation between them, the fact that they were both by default not what you'd expect, you know, Asian Americans for one.
Yeah.
Two Asian Americans.
Stoners.
Stoners, right? Stoner Americans. But, you know, the fact is they lived their skin in such an easy way that even if you actually saw the things they did and said and some of the interaction they had as sexist, racist, over-the-top, misogynist, it was done in a way that really did feel kind of post-something. I don't want to say post-racial, but certainly post-racial obsession. Now, if you look at this film, imagine if Harold and Kumar were made, except that Harold and Kumar were unconscious in a corner and you replace them with two white folk.
Right, right, yeah.
But
yeah.
This is what I have to say about the post idea. Okay, so you mentioned Weekend at Bernie's, which this movie also reminded me of Weekend at Bernie's. And of course, it reminded me of The Hangover. Both of those movies, you have a primary character who's either completely passed out or absent or dead through the whole thing. Would you have an issue if Jeff Chang was actually Jeff Jones and passed out the whole time?
I don't think I would, but, you know, then again, I don't think that the dimension would have even been part of the narrative, right? I mean, the fact is there is a racial component to the movie, just as there was, frankly, in Harold and Kumar, for very similar reasons. I mean, you know, Kumar, Cal Penn's character, in the first movie was actually going to have a med school interview or, you know, the next day,
right.
Much like Jeff Chang. And the over-the-top domineering dad, you know, Indian in Harold and Kumar and in this one, I guess Korean or Chinese American?
Chinese, I think. Isn't he supposed to be Chinese?
I think so.
Yeah, I mean, Justin Chan is Korean, but, you know, it doesn't matter in the context of this film. The fact is Tiger Dad, whatever the Asian ethnicity. So that is a big part of the film. And if it was Jeff Jones or Smith, I don't think that the easy laughs about intergenerational hostility or cultural expectations would have been there in the same way.
Well, also, I feel like
not to mention penis jokes.
Yes, right. I also think, like what you're saying about Harold and Kumar. I think what was appealing about them is that they were aware of, but not defined by their race. Mm-hmm. They were not trapped in it. Jeff Chang is, and for some reason, again, you could make the argument that perhaps in a different 21 and over film, they would spend the whole film calling him Jeff Jones. But they wouldn't. It's the the fact that his last name is Chang is what is funny about that joke. It's important to call him Jeff Chang and remind us all over and over that this is the Asian guy.
Exactly.
And he's not – I kept wondering to myself – like Weekend at Bernie's definitely came up in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept thinking to myself, because there are so many similarities to The Hangover, you know, the Asian dad really is essentially anyone's wife from The Hangover, right? Right. He's the one you're all scared. Oh, my God, we're all scared of this, you know, this domineering force in our lives that we can't get away from. You know, The Hangover was women now, and this one it's our dad. But I kept thinking, so what is Jeff Chang? And I kept thinking, is he the monkey from Hangover 2? And then I thought,
he's the baby that
Zach Galifianakis carries around, and they actually call him the baby.
Yes.
They call Jeff Chang the baby several times in this movie. And it's all, you know, it's infant. It's, I can't say that word, infantilizing.
It is infantilizing. Yeah.
Yes, you know what I'm saying?
I cannot believe I'm the one defending this movie. By the way, I don't want to make it sound like this is a great work of art. I'm just saying that maybe I went in with really low expectations and I thought I was going to just be so much more upset about it and hate it so much more. But Jeff Yang, when you and I were sitting next to each other, Jeff Yang, you and I both laughed out loud a few times.
Sure.
And there were some moments where I know you and I were not laughing at the movie, but with the movie, right. and really enjoying it. And I went in just thinking
those were
those
were moments, by the way, when Jeff Chang wasn't on screen. I might add. I mean, here's the thing. I've really gotten to a point now where a film like this. I even said this, jokingly to Rafer as we're coming in. It doesn't really even seem consequential enough to spend 22 minutes talking about, except for the fact that I think it really does. And in part because there are some funny moments in it. And actually, I was slightly won over by some of the performances. I think there were some talented actors in there. I even think Justin Chan is a great sport for taking on, what he did during the film. But given all that, the only reason I think why this is really worth maybe engaging is just because this past week, we have in fact seen how the limitations of this particular kind of humor, the sort of frat humor, has hit, I think, a cultural turning point in our society. At least that's what I'm saying. And I'm going to be writing about this weekend myself.
You mean after the Oscars?
You're talking about Seth MacFarlane.
Oh, yes, I'm talking about Oscars. And specifically Seth MacFarlane, because when you think about it, a lot of what really does make the film feel uncomfortable in a lot of ways is this notion of, the people who are being made fun of being there but sort of unconscious spectators, right? Mm-hmm. Non-actors. I mean, actors but non-agents, right? And I think part of what made the Seth MacFarlane stuff so deeply awkward in a lot of ways is because you had, again, this, young, smirky, smarmy white guy, who's making these jokes at the expense of, women and people of color and Jews and gays and consciously throughout it representing that I'm not that. I'm not a woman. I'm not gay. I'm very clearly not gay.
Oh, yes. The clearly not gay clearly. Joke. Right, yeah. right.
So, the limit there feels like he's trying to be laughing with the crowd but clearly separating himself from that crowd. And at the same time, there wasn't a lot of room. I think that it could have been different in some ways if you had somebody on stage laughing with him who is not so clearly representative of the increasingly minority white male population of the United States. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I think this movie also wants to be part of a post-racial world. There's that line where Casey, one of the white characters, says, he's as American as you are about Jeff Chang. And I kind of thought, well, A, I don't think that's true. and B, the only reason that you would say that is to alleviate my guilt at laughing at these jokes. I think this movie wants to be post-racial, but I think it's clearly not. So do we all agree that it's a bad date or Kristen?
I'm making it sound like I'm defending this movie. What I'm really saying is I didn't hate it as much as I expected. That doesn't mean it's a good date. I really wish that Jeff Yang, his character, had
Jeff
more.
Chang.
Jeff Chang. Oh, God.
Now you're doing it.
Oh. Now I'm doing it. Oh, hey. Snap. Man, I wish Jeff Yang and I would have agreed. No, I'm trying to save myself. It's not working. I wish Jeff Chang had something that made him more whole and more round and more autonomous and have any sense of realness to him. That would have been great rather than just being – he's pretty much a sack of potatoes just being carried around. He could have been played by a pillow. But, yeah, I'm not saying this is a great date. I was a little bit playing devil's advocate, but it's a pretty bad date.
It's pretty bad.
And Jeff Yang, bad
date? I will say, though, that any date with Kristen is a good date.
Oh, that's
Kristen.
So nice. well, you know what we want to do before you leave us? Thanks for visiting us, first of all, today. We're really thrilled that you sat through this movie and
thanks,
that you
Jeff
brought
Yang.
your great commentary and your insights to it. But we want to go out with trivia. And first, let's remind everyone of last week's trivia. And then, Jeff, you brought a question for this week. So, yes. Ray, for last week's trivia.
Last week's trivia, in honor of A Good Day to Die Hard, we revisited the old Die Hard, Die Hard with a Vengeance, and we asked viewers if they could solve the mysterious water jug riddle that that Jeremy Irons poses to Bruce Willis. Here, by the way, is the answer.
I got it. Exactly 2 gallons in here, right?
Right.
Leaving exactly 1 gallon of empty space, right?
Yeah.
A full 5 gallons here, right?
Right.
You pour 1 gallon out of 5 gallons into there, we have exactly four gallons in there. Yeah. Pour it in there. Come on.
So complicated,
so clever,
and scientific,
so clever.
Oh, I want him to die hard my puzzles.
It's a good thing he had Samuel L. Jackson to help him on that one, though. All right. And so this week, in honor of 21 and over, we're going to throw this to Jeff Yang and let him finish us out here with the trivia.
I'll play you off with trivia. So, the son of a two-time Oscar-winning director made his big screen debut in a movie very much like 21 and Over. Name the actor, the director, and the movie.
If you know, give us a call, 5717-MOVIES.
Or, as always, log on to facebook.com/moviedatepodcast. I've come to